This is episode 60 of the Sugar Mamas podcast and the 8th in the series for parents of teens living with type 1. Rachel Halverson, my favorite certified diabetes care and education specialist, she's back today to talk to us about drinking alcohol and the effect it has on blood sugars. If you're wondering why I chose to put this in the teen series, then you'll just have to keep listening to find out. Enjoy! You're listening to the Sugar Mamas podcast, a show designed for moms and caregivers of type 1 diabetics. Here you'll find a community of like-minded people who are striving daily to keep their kids safe, happy, and healthy in the ever-changing world of type 1. I'm your host and fellow T1D mom, Katie Roseboro. Enjoy! Before we get started, I need you to know that nothing you hear on the Sugar Mamas podcast should be considered medical advice. Please be safe, be smart, and always consult your physician before making changes to the way you manage type 1 diabetes. Thanks. All right, we are back with Rachel Halverson, and today Rachel and I are talking about drinking with diabetes and alcohol and just the effects that it has on the body. Yeah, I have to say, because I just think it's so funny, but Rachel brought it up too. I named this episode Drinking with Rachel. And if it wasn't 10:30 in the morning right now, Rachel and I decided that it would have been very appropriate to show up with a beverage.
For science.
For science, for the sake of science. Maybe next time. Yes. Well, hello, Rachel. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm excited to be back.
I'm always excited to have you on. It's getting bad though, because now I know I can show up to Rachel's talks with Rachel with like right now my hair is soaking wet because I didn't have time to dry it. So like I've already told her I look like a wet rat that climbed out of the swimming pool. So who knows what's going to be next time, Rachel? I mean, I might just be laying in my bed recording an episode.
I'm like in a Blink 182 shirt from the 90s. And I even, yeah, it's not. You look great comparatively, so
thanks. Well, just for anyone listening, if you ever want to come on the show, there's no dress code. You can just show up in your pajamas, whatever it is you're wearing. All right. Well, this is kind of a touchy subject, especially for a podcast that is for parents and caregivers of T1Ds. And this is going to be part of our teen series. But I think it's something that's really important to talk about because I don't know about you, but it's confession time. But I did drink alcohol before I turned 21. So, and I feel like really you'd be hard pressed to find a teen that hasn't, right? Before they get to college, most likely, or definitely when they get to college, if not before.
Yes, that's definitely fair to say. I was a bit of a weirdo and like waited until I was 21%, but that was weird. Hey. And I can attest, like most of my friends had already, like it wasn't even fun by the time I was 21 because everybody was burned out of drinking. So, because they did it before me. So, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a thing to discuss because it happened so much earlier than we think it will.
Wow, Rachel, I'm majorly impressed.
I don't know what. I was like busy studying or something. It was so bizarre.
Yeah. But, yeah. Well, do you think this is something that's even worth bringing up to? I hope so, because we're about to record an episode on it. But do you think it's something worth bringing up to parents who have T1D teens?
Absolutely. Because, you know, even if it's something that we hope that our teens will wait until they're a little bit older and a little bit more able to make some more mature decisions to do those mature activities. The reality of it is that just isn't what happens, statistically speaking, and just from our society and cultural standpoint, we often drink a lot earlier than 21.
Yeah.
So I think it is important because of what happens when you have type 1 diabetes to have that discussion with your teen or if they're going off to college, to reiterate that with them and I'll have that discussion with them.
And I mean, I think the US has like one of the latest drinking ages in the world. So if people are listening from other countries, which I know a lot of people do, then yeah, their kid might be able to drink at 18 or maybe even younger than that, you know, a lot of times younger than that. It was so funny. When my sister turned 18, my dad was like, okay, well, what do you want to do? You want to go out, like, out to a bar and get a drink? And my sister was like, Dad, I'm only 18. He was like, wait a minute, what's the drinking age? And she was like 21. And he's like, when did they change that?
Yeah, I was going to. Yeah, it was 18 not too long ago. It was a couple.
Yeah.
What, 20 years ago or something.
Yeah. So, it had to be more than that because my sister's 40. But I mean, yeah, maybe not too long, relatively speaking, maybe 30 or so years ago. So yeah, it used to be teen years. Okay. So let's just start with basic question of how does alcohol affect blood sugars?
It is wildly unpredictable, which is why it is important to talk about it, because it is very, it relies on like a lot of different factors. So it can drop you. That's usually what we're concerned about, is the hypoglycemia accompanied with alcohol drinking. And we'll talk more about the processes with that, but typically drops you low. And for a lot of people also, it can make treating above target blood sugars difficult as well. Because alcohol dehydrates you and just makes it difficult to get the insulin moving at that point. So it could do lots of different stuff to your blood sugar. But the main thing we are concerned about usually is that blood sugar drop that happens usually overnight, unfortunately. It happens hours after you've been drinking.
And I'm guessing not all alcohols are created equal. Could we maybe like break it down and talk about different ones? Like, what about beer?
They all have the same effect on the blood sugar. The issue mainly is like, you know, wine and beer are going to have carbs because of what they're made of. And then, you know, those sugary mixers also are going to have carbs. So that does make it more unpredictable when you add some carbs in and then you're like, well, do I bolus for this? How much more do I bolus for it? If I'm kind of worried about going low, they do, you know, depending on the type, it doesn't necessarily change the effect that the alcohol is going to have on you, but rather it's just that the addition of carbohydrates that maybe might add a little bit of uncertainty when you're kind of doing stuff.
Yeah. So we'll get back to that in a second with the carb heavy alcoholic beverages. But like, let's just say hypothetically you're in like a lab setting and somebody with type 1 diabetes is going to take like a shot of vodka that has no carbs in it, right? So is that by itself, like the effect of the alcohol is that it's going to lower your blood sugar?
Yes. So when you are drinking alcohol, your liver has decided that alcohol is the main thing to process and nothing else.
Okay.
So it's not even really going to be processing food anymore. And it's also not going to, what the liver does on a day-to-day basis in people without diabetes and people that are living with diabetes, it is affected by glucagon, which is a hormone that we still produce with diabetes, but a little bit weirder and more unpredictably, but we still produce it. And glucagon causes the liver to release sugar, stored up glycogen, which acts as glucose in the bloodstream. And when you are drinking, that's not going to be happening anymore because your liver is busy processing the alcohol because it's like the first threat that it sees and that's what it wants to work on. So you're not going to be getting that glucose that's stored up in the liver. And that's why we tend to see people dropping, because we have basal rates going and things like that, that are typically we are using for that glycogen release. So when your liver is busy, that's why we see those drops, is because that's not going to be happening anymore.
Interesting. Okay. So the liver is very, it's like it can only do one thing at a time. So
yeah.
Okay.
You can't multitask.
So if the liver was a human, let's personify the liver, it would not be a mom.
Nope. It is very one track, one minded. It's not very helpful in this situation.
Okay. There was a disconnect in my brain about why, because I kept reading that like alcohol is going to drop your blood sugar. And I'm like, well, why? Nobody's explaining why it's going to drop your blood sugar. But yeah, that makes sense. Okay. Because your liver can only do one thing at a time. And when there's alcohol in the system, it's going to focus on that and filtering that through.
Yep.
Okay. Okay. So, and then it's not going to be till, how long does it usually take the liver? I mean, I guess it depends on how much you drink, but like what is it, like a tip, like one drink, how long does it take the liver to process, you know, a beer or a glass of wine or something like that?
That would vary per person.
Yeah,
I think it's like
3 hours. Whenever you're not, when you're supposed to, however long you're supposed to wait before you go drive after you have those. I would never like even probably have one drink and drive, but yeah. So I'm
24
not
hours,
sure,
Rachel. But. 24 yeah. hours.
I always thought that was weird advice, like have one glass of wine and go drink. I would just feel very wrong doing that. But I think it's like 2 to 3 hours is kind of if you had one, mm-hmm. you know, wine, drink a wine or a shot, a serving of alcohol, mm-hmm. which is like a glass of wine, one beer, mm-hmm. 6 ounces of hard liquor or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, typically when we're, if you are a younger person drinking, you're probably going to have a little bit more than that. And then, you know, that's just going to take longer to process. And yeah, when that's the case, then the liver is really not going to be paying attention okay. to your blood sugar.
Hold on. I was like, you said 6 ounces of liquor. And I'm like, that sounds like a lot of liquor.
Oh, isn't JK, hold ounce? On.
Yeah.
One ounce
of liquor. I mean, it's a shot, isn't it? Or 1.5 ounces, maybe? It's 1.5. I just Googled it. Here, I'll read it. What is a standard drink? So 12 fluid ounces of regular beer, 8 to 9 fluid ounces of malt liquor, five, they've changed that, 5 fluid ounces of table wine. I'm like, I think it used to be 8. Dang.
That's what it says. Yeah.
And then 1.5 fluid ounces of spirits, like liquor and rum and all that stuff. Okay. We got off track, but just FYI, for anybody that wanted to know what a standard serving size was.
Right. Well, you're supposed to have like one drink. If you're a lady, you get one drink a day and then two mm-hmm. drinks for men a day. I'm like, I can't imagine drinking every day. I would just be wrecked.
Oh, I can't either. I know.
But yes, that's the typical serving size recommendations every yeah. day.
Well, and the older I get, I can't even uh-uh. sleep anymore if I have even a glass of wine. I'm like, well, this is right. fun. This is so fun.
No, I totally agree. It's not worth it.
Right. Well, let's talk about the carbs. Let's go back to the carbs. So, you know, rarely are people just doing shots, right? Especially in the absence of food, or at least I hope they're not, because that would be very dangerous. But so either there's carbs in the beer or the wine or in the sugary mixers that you're dealing with, and then you're also usually like eating on top of that, because most people at least start drinking when there's a meal involved. So how do you handle that? Like how do you know, do you even bolus for the carbs in a beer or a glass of wine, or do you cut back on your basal rate? Like I'm sure everybody's different, but what do you typically do, and what are your thoughts on that?
I think if anything you're going to cut back on, it would be like your basal rate. And you know, now we have, thank goodness, we have continuous glucose monitors available, because that's really what made it so difficult and dangerous previously. I mean, I personally still don't want to go above target. So I opt for, if you can opt for those sugar-free, you know, like a diet rum and coke mm-hmm. or a skinny, any skinny version of something is going to be the low sugar version. Just because we don't want to add that kind of thing to the mix mm-hmm. As much as possible. If, though, you choose to have, and I think for the most part, like beer and wine, they're not as sugary as those mixers. So mm-hmm. that's still kind of a safe thing to bolus for. And unfortunately, the other thing that's crazy is that there's no nutrition facts or labels on your alcoholic beverages, because it is not regulated by the FDA. So that's always a pain in the butt. So you're going to have to Google what the carb count is on those. Mm-hmm. And if you're a little tipsy, that can be a struggle as well. So I try really hard myself to, I'm like a vodka soda person. Like it's very no carbs kind of experience, because I just don't want to, if I'm going to be bolusing for something, I want it to be my food, mm-hmm. basically. Mm-hmm. And you want to always be eating with your alcohol, because if you're drinking on an empty stomach, it's going to move very, very quickly and really inhibit your liver and everything else. So always having a meal. And thankfully, bar food is it's what we would recommend, because it's high fat, high protein, a little bit of carbs, just to help hold you overnight and everything like that. I think it's totally reasonable to consider that a temp basal like you would use for exercise is reasonable to put on during this time. If you are MDI, the same thing you would do as if you're about to go exercise. So maybe just a little bit less insulin than you would take for a snack or something along those lines. Mm-hmm. Just because we want to err on the side of caution. If you have the opportunity to drink something that's lower in sugar, you know, mm-hmm. aim for that, just because it can be very triggering to see your blood sugar spike from those sugary drinks, and you want to bolus for them and rage bolus and mm-hmm. that kind of thing. So if you could kind of prevent that from happening as much as possible, then that would be a good recommendation. But you do, yeah, it's a balancing act sort of thing as you sort of figure out how you react to alcohol and that sort of thing. Hmm. Then you'll kind of understand what a good percentage of the bullets is for you to take. Mm-hmm. It's kind of observing.
I feel like you could get into a sticky situation if you had something really sugary, like a margarita or something like that, and it spiked you. And then, like you mm-hmm. said, you're kind of tempted to bolus for that, but yes. then you're not thinking about, you know, later on down the road, it's that alcohol is going to bring you down anyway because of what's going on in the liver.
Right.
Okay. Well, so, but if you were to go out and like have a drink and you are doing like a no sugar, no carb beverage, but you're also eating a meal, you would still bolus for the meal like you normally would, or maybe do a tiny bit less, or?
If you're wearing an insulin pump, I think mm-hmm. the decrease in temp basal is good and will set you up for being as safe as possible. And of course, if you're wearing these Control IQ or the new Omnipod or something like that, that shuts off basal or adjusts it for what's going on, that is also an added layer of protection for you. But yes, it is still advised that you correct and bolus at the same rate, maybe a little bit less, mm-hmm. especially if you're dancing or being active, running around like. But mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're just having a normal people night at the bar or something, yeah, kind of just as you normally would bolus mm-hmm. would be fine.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point because people aren't usually just sitting on their couch, especially in college, you know, or the teen years, sitting on their couch and drinking by themselves. They're usually like out walking around the bar scene or the club scene, or they're out dancing. So there's the activity to factor in too. So like, I like that advice. Like until you know how your body's going to react, just be cautious.
Right.
Yeah. I think my main concern with a teen would be, and not that I'm definitely going to talk to Sarah about this because I think she needs to be aware, and I don't want to like scare her or anything, but like, hey, you know, this is what alcohol does in somebody's body that has diabetes, and this is why you need to be mindful of it, and just so she knows and can be thinking about it. I don't know. Everybody's thoughts on this and opinions on this is probably very different, but I don't feel like having a level-headed conversation with your teen about something like that is going to encourage them to just go out and go hog wild. I don't think it necessarily means you're giving them permission to go do those things. You're just being realistic, and it's like, you know, chances are this is probably going to happen. Not that you actually have to say that to your teen, but you know in your mind that chances are this is probably going to happen. So I at least want you to be aware of what could happen.
I mean, it definitely helps to have them make better decisions. If they did have that conversation with me, I obviously was not paying enough attention. So but I even as somebody that followed the quote unquote rules and went out when I was 21, I was still being very reckless because I did not understand what it did to my diabetes. And this was pre-CGMs, all that good stuff. So I was like falling asleep, like didn't care because it just wasn't a conversation that anybody had with me. I think it's good to say, hey, I'm not going to lecture you about this, but I want you to know that there are serious implications and dangers for somebody with diabetes when they're drinking. Would it be okay if we talked about it? And if they're not okay talking about it with you, then asking your healthcare provider to discuss it with them, or giving them a little, the College Diabetes Network has some really good information about drinking, and we can link it, but giving them that resource and always just bringing it up every couple of years before we send them off is really important, just so that they are again reminded of the fact that they need to be a little bit more careful than the average person.
Yeah,
so I think that's totally reasonable.
Yeah, I agree. All right. My next question is about the liver, but we kind of already talked about that. Oh, I do have a question. Okay. So let's review real quick. The liver has a one-track mind, cannot multitask. So when there's alcohol in the system, it's focusing on processing the alcohol and it's not releasing the normal glucose that it normally releases. Okay. And then why? So I have heard and read that glucagon, like let's say somebody was out drinking and they did have a pretty severe low or even just a low or whatever, and they or maybe a friend was trying to give them glucagon. I have heard that glucagon is not effective when you're drinking alcohol. Is that true? And if so, why? Hey guys, it's Katie, interrupting for just a second to tell you about the product feature of the week, Diet Detector Test Strips. Have you ever ordered a diet drink for your type 1 kiddo at a restaurant and then watch as their blood sugar launches off into outer space because the beverage they were served wasn't actually a diet drink? Yeah, it's really not very fun. But with the Diet Detector Test Strips, you can be confident that the drinks you order are T1D friendly. You literally just dip the test strip into the drink, and within seconds, you know if it's really what you asked for. I will leave an Amazon affiliate link in the show notes so you can grab some for your diabetes go bag. Last, I want to give a huge shout out to Heather Thumb, who recently supported the show through Buy Me a Coffee. Thank you so much for your generous donation. I can assure you that every single penny given goes straight into the software, virtual space, and equipment needed each week to make this show come to life. So again, from the bottom of my heart and the bottom of my daughter's insulin cartridge, thank you. Would you like to check it out too? Head on over to buymeacoffee.com/sugarmama. I'll leave a link in the show notes. I have heard that glucagon is not effective when you're drinking alcohol. Is that true? And if so, why?
It is. Yeah. And that's, again, part of what makes it so stank and dangerous is the fact that the lows are not only does it make you low, but it also makes the lows really hard to treat. Mm. Yeah. So the glucagon is the same glucagon that your alpha cells release and poke at the liver and say, hey, we need you to release some glycogen and then turn that into glucose. Mm. And when you're injecting that glucagon, same thing. It's going to say, I'm busy. I'm not going to do it. So the glucagon injection is not going to be effective and it's not going to work. Mm. And so if that person who has been drinking and has diabetes is passed out, our only option now is to take them to the emergency room to get IV dextrose, which is glucose in your that they can push. And I think even the EMTs can do it. So somebody will come and push that very quickly. And I say that, and I know that sounds really drastic and crazy because we usually kind of associate the hospital with like a really, we should never. Same with glucagon. We often think glucagon is this last resort. And then I get worried that people are afraid to use it because it's got like this stigma attached to it. And same with the hospital. But, you know, by all means, please call someone if that is the case. Because, yeah, it's the glucagon is not going to work because your liver is busy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and I forget it too, but I think a lot of people think that glucagon, like we have the nasal spray, and then I know a lot of people use like the Gvoke HypoPen, and then there's like the old school glucagon. But I think a lot of people think that glucagon is glucose, like you are putting glucose into the system, but it's not. It's a substance that's going to trigger the liver, and then the liver will dump out glycogen or like their normal sugar supplies.
Right.
So, and then, of course, like we already discussed, if the liver is already processing alcohol, it's not going to pay attention to that glucagon. So what about like, would shoving frosting in someone's cheek work in that situation? Or like, because it's that's getting absorbed through the saliva or membranes or whatever. It's getting that absorbed through the thing.
Yeah, that's definitely a possibility as well. I do worry just because depending on, I get nervous, I guess, suggesting those things just because
choking
our and you know, like other processes in the body are a little bit inhibited as well if you are that out of it. But yeah, so putting some sugar, so I always, whenever I'm saying you're, you know, when you're walking around, you're drinking, hopefully you're walking around, and the glucose tablets and glucose gels and things that you can put, you know, in your mouth and dissolve that way are going to be the best way to treat a low when you are drinking. Because Also, unfortunately, we tend to eat a bunch of junk sometimes if we weren't paying, you know, pizza party or something like that. And then we also have now our digestive system is a little bit slower than it should be. So glucose tabs and gel are going to be your best friend, or some frosting, like stick that on in your cheek. But yes, if somebody's unconscious, I prefer that we just, you know, call emergent services, just because, yeah, there could be a fear that somebody could choke on something or throw up. Just have more issues.
I feel like I've been doing a lot of laughing, which this is really not an appropriate. This is not like an appropriate. Right. This is part of my coping mechanism, everybody, if you're wondering why I'm laughing. It's just terrifying and a little uncomfortable to talk about. So that's why you probably hear me laughing. Well, but when we were talking about frosting and you said like walking around, if you're walking around and you've been out drinking, like using frosting. Have you ever been at a kid's birthday party and like the frosting on the cake or the cupcake is blue and it's like their entire mouth and their teeth? So I'm just picturing like this college age kid like out of dancing and they're got blue teeth.
I mean, it is like this, maybe this will comfort someone a little bit, but like I've been out, like this is probably just an insane scene, but like I volunteer with a diabetes camp, and the staff also has type 1 diabetes. And after the camps are over, we usually go out to a bar and have some drinks together. And it's honestly like I if the bartenders knew how volatile the situation was, I'm sure they would never. They'd be like, "This is ridiculous." But it's funny because one time I was texting a friend that was at that party, and I was at a different place, and I was talking to him, and he said, "Yeah, we were at so-and-so bar, and now we're at the ER because this girl's blood sugar wouldn't come up." And my mind, I texted him, I said, "Where's the ER? I thought it was another bar."
Oh my gosh.
But it was a very matter of fact, like all these, you know, they're all nurses with diabetes. And they all knew, like, we need to just go to the emergency room and get this person some. This person wasn't passed out or anything like that, but they were just having difficulty getting her blood sugar up. And they were like, "We're just going to have to go to the emergency room.
You're like, "Where's the? I've never heard of the ER. Sounds like a fun place."
There was some trendy, like, club or something.
Yeah.
So we still have fun, despite the fact that it tends to be a little bit more unpredictable. But I think that's important to make everybody aware that like going to the ER is not, sometimes that is necessary. And it's a tool that we as people with diabetes have to use sometimes. And that's okay.
Yeah.
I obviously don't want you to have to go. But if push comes to shove and you can't treat the low and you know that glucagon is not an option for you, then that's totally an okay step to take. And you can text me about it, and I will know exactly where you are this time. So
yeah. Well, at some point in time, they started calling the ER the ED in a lot of places.
Yeah.
So, you know, I feel like that's an honest mistake. I know when I started working at a hospital, this was back in 2012, I remember like looking up charts for patients that I was going to go see. And I'm like, "What is the ED? Like, what is ED?" Because, you know, there's like a million acronyms in there. I'm like, "The ED?" I had to ask one of my coworkers. I'm like, "What does ED stand for? I've never seen that acronym." Right, they're like, "Emergency department." I'm like, "Oh, well, when do we start calling it the ED? I thought it was the ER."
I know. They're just changing these names up on me, and I feel you.
I know.
Well, right. Now we know.
Exactly. We won't mistake it for a bar next time. Hilarious. All right. Okay. So luckily that person that you were just talking about was with a group of T1Ds who knew what to do.
Yeah.
But most of the time, you're probably going to be out with people that don't have type 1, right. I would imagine. So I just definitely want to like pause for a second and talk to parents about like trying to encourage your kid to educate their friends about just type 1 in general. Teach them how to use your glucagon if you ever needed it. I mean, obviously wouldn't maybe work in the case of the drinking situation, but like, you know, even if they're just at school or, you know, at a sporting event or whatever, try to encourage your teens to educate their friends and teach them how to use their stuff should they need to. Give their friends your phone number. And I mean, I would never be angry at somebody for calling me in an emergency. I would just be grateful that they called me. But what else? Like what, you know, it's tricky because being drunk or tipsy can often look like you're low at times. So is there a difference between the two? Like, I mean, I'm just curious to know. I mean, if you're a teen and you're out drinking, you're probably not going to have any clue. But is there a difference between actually being low and being tipsy?
Another layer to the, again, I'm so sorry. It's like the Olympics, diabetes, because it really adds all of these challenges. And that's one of them also. You really probably are not going to be able to tell the difference in yourself and someone else who is having a hypo episode. In fact, I watched like a couple of cops episodes where they would pull people over that looked very drunk and were acting super drunk, and they actually just had low blood sugars. So it's really hard to tell. And the person that is experiencing it probably won't be able to. It really masks those symptoms as well. So you're really going to be relying on finger sticks or CGM checks. The alcohol should not affect your continuous glucose monitor reading, so it should still be accurate. So that's a good thing to know. But I always like, my designated driver is always also my designated diabetes buddy. Like, I let them know that this is what needs to happen. Like, I have a little index card and I write down. It's like caring for someone's plant when they leave. But yeah, like this is what I need if this happens. This is where my supplies are if this happens. And when in doubt, if something seems off to you, it is okay. I am not going to be upset if you call 911 and get me help. Mm-hmm. Like, that is okay. Mm-hmm. So yeah. And then honestly, like, just letting everybody. So like, I always let my mom would text me when I got to a new dorm or something, was like, you have to tell your roommates that you have type 1 diabetes. But yes, always just letting people know kind of what you're, I know at the time that annoyed me, but I did. And I'm sure it was helpful.
Yeah.
To have everybody around you know that, but especially when you're in a group of people that are drinking, to have them aware of that so they can assist you when they hear that Dexcom alarm, because it's still going to be going off.
Oh my gosh, Rachel, I hadn't even thought about that until right now. If you go to college and you're in a dorm and you have a random roommate, sorry, I'm so sorry, but you're going to hear me beeping in the middle of the night. These are my alarms. You're not going to get any sleep for the next 4 years.
So it's so awkward. Thankfully, the college I went to, we were in separate rooms, so that was really helpful. Mm-hmm. I actually only had an insulin pump, so I didn't have that same experience. But yeah, it's definitely, it would be ideal if they could pair you up with another person with diabetes. I'm sure that's something. Something you could ask about, but yeah, it still works out though, because you know, when you are in that situation where you're with a group of people or at a party, then everybody's aware of something that might be going on, and people are really nice, thankfully, and we'll try to help you. And so,
okay, I'm gonna put that out of my mind and not think about that again until Sarah's going off to college, because there's no point in worrying about that now.
I honestly had not considered that, because again, it's like CGMs for me are pretty new, and I never had a shared room with somebody. So I've never considered that what I would do in that situation. They're just going to have to not sleep. They're probably not sleeping because they're studying so hard anyway. So
yeah.
It's fine.
I mean, honestly, Sarah's alarms don't really go off that much at night anymore. Thank goodness.
That's good.
Because we've dialed in her basal pretty well. But so hopefully it wouldn't be like a crazy amount of alarms going off. But anyway.
And like on young adults sleep so heavy. Like, I'm sure Yeah. They'll probably just sleep through it. Yeah.
Yeah. I know. I've already told Sarah I'm going to have to like rig up some sort of mousetrap situation, like over her bed.
Yes.
Where a bucket of cold water will get dumped on her head if she doesn't wake.
That's what I mean. Like, people learn how to just sleep through them. So I'm sure that'll be the saving grace there.
Yeah. I don't think Sarah's ever woken up for one Dexcom alarm, which again, not going to be thinking about that now. Going to save that worry for, where are we? 8 years from now.
Right, exactly. We have time to figure that out.
Right, exactly. Maybe it'll figure itself out before that time. Maybe her body will, I don't know. You know, as you get older, your body's a little bit more aware of things. Okay, I'm going to start praying for that now. I'm going to like writing down a list of prayer requests. Start praying for a good roommate, good spouse, best friends, her to wake up to her alarms. Goodness gracious. All right, let's see. But we've already covered some of those things. Eating, you mentioned eating, making sure if you are going to drink that you are also eating with it, having food in the system, and then having a buddy system of some sort, giving friends, your kids' friends, your phone number, your spouse's phone number, whatever it takes. Anything else? What other tips to stay safe while drinking?
I think that really is the, if you are not wearing a CGM, or maybe you don't wake up to those alarms, it would be like if you did some or you plan on doing some pretty decent drinking, or you think that might be your situation, then having alarms set on your phone. I used to do that. I would have it every 2 hours. It would say, check your blood sugar. And of course, irresponsible me was like, but my friends would hear it and they were like, Rachel, it's time to check your blood sugar. So that was helpful. But also then during the night, it can kind of coax you awake so you can check to make sure that you haven't dropped or that you don't need a treat. You are much more likely to wake up to alarms when you have been drinking since you're getting poor sleep. But just to have that added alarm there, if you're not wearing a CGM or if you tend to not wake up for that alarm, just before you go out, set those alarms so that you can, unfortunately, wake up in the middle of the night just to check on things.
Right.
But that would be something I would add to it, just to give yourself some extra reminders and accountability.
Okay. That's a good idea. Yeah. It just seems like such an unpredictable thing, which is... those are the first words that came out of your mouth. So trial and error, lots and lots of trial and error on that one.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that about covers it for my questions. Is there anything else that you think we missed or anything else you want to add?
I don't think so. If it comforts anybody, most people I know and myself included have very good experiences with drinking alcohol. These are more like, you know, worst case scenario kind of experiences, but
yeah.
Most of the time, you know, it might drop your blood sugar, but a lot of the time you tend to stay kind of within normal limits. You're pretty good about just monitoring it. So,
yeah. And I think the real danger comes when you're just drinking way too much, which,
yeah,
I mean, can happen, especially in college. But hopefully,
right,
if you've had a chat with them beforehand, just so they're aware, they'll be a lot more willing and, you know, capable of taking care of themselves and staying safe. So anyway, goodness, I hope that didn't scare anybody. It probably did. Probably scared the pants off of most parents listening to this.
I think it would be really surprising to find out how supportive friends are and how responsible they are when they have someone that needs a little bit of extra monitoring and that kind of thing. So if there is ever a situation where somebody needs a little bit more help or is a little bit more out of it than everybody else in the group, they are, you know, I was always very impressed. My friends always took really good care of me as well. That's one perk. Like friends tend to be bad influences, but they are very good at just making sure everybody's safe.
Yeah, that's good. All right. Well, thank you so much. Thanks. Thank you for your time. And oh, you know what? Real quick, just take a minute because I've been talking it up on some of my other episodes, but tell people about your Bolus Busters course that you've created. It's amazing, everybody.
I'm super excited about it. So I know there was there's always a lot of, it's just like a struggle trying to figure out like what the right technique is for certain foods like pizza or takeout, breakfast cereal, all of those sorts of things. So I put it all into one spot to kind of help people get a deeper dive and understanding of how foods are digested and how that affects the blood sugar and how you can bolus for them. So when you're making those decisions or helping your kid make those decisions, you have a little bit better of a plan put in place or baseline. Because again, something else that is very variable and unique is bold. But so it does take some trial and error. But in this way, at least you'll have like a very deep understanding of how it works in the body and like a good baseline. There's some little tools for tracking those things. Workbooks to go through and a little section thanks to Katie on alcohol. It has the designated diabetes buddy index card that I hand to my friends in there. So that's the course, and you can find it on my website, which is www.givemesomesugar.coach/bolusbusters. It'll be there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really great. I had the opportunity to go through it myself, and it's, you know, I like how it's a lot of, I don't know, you just laid it out in such like a easy to follow, easy to understand, practical way. There's text, there's videos, there's pictures. So it's kind of like you know, it hits all the senses, and I think it was great. And I really like that it's not just like a course that people sign up for. Like they can act, they actually have access to you where they can, you know, use the chat box to kind of ask you questions, troubleshoot things, get your opinion on things. So I think it's great. I'll link to it in the show notes for sure.
Thanks, Kate.
You're welcome. All right, girl. Well, have a good rest of your day. It's, we still got the whole day ahead of us, really. I'm going to go blow dry my hair. All right. Have a good one. See you soon.
All right. Bye. Bye.
That's it for our show today. I will link to the information that Rachel alluded to about drinking from the College Diabetes Network. That will be in the show notes. And let's see. I will also link to where you can find Rachel and her new super amazing Bolus Busters course. Check it out. Seriously, if you're having trouble getting diabetes under control and you want a little bit more one-on-one time and attention from a certified diabetes care and education specialist on how you can bolus for those really tricky foods and really just all foods in general, then you should definitely take a look at the course. Not only do you have access to awesome information, but you also have access to Rachel. She's available to chat and help you troubleshoot and take all the information you learn from the course and apply it to your everyday life. Again, all the links are in the show notes. And bonus, if you use code SUGARMAMA, that's SUGARMAMA, at checkout, you can save $50 off the course. That's pretty sweet, am I right? All right, talk with you next time, friends. As always, stay calm and bolus on. Bye.